Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, a radio.com sports station.
By the way, I think the Cowboys are in Oxnard by now, right? They're no longer in Thousand Oaks.
I think you're probably right.
Oxnard. What, you know what's funny is Oxnard touts what a beautifully named city it is. It doesn't. That to me does not ring beautiful. Oxnard sounds like the nickname for the fat kid.
To me, Thousand Oaks is Oxnard.
Okay,
they're all the same thing. But I was incorrect. Thousand Oaks is where they used to be. I don't track my training camps.
I think the Rams are in Thousand Oaks now. That's why you got Thousand Oaks on the brain.
Yeah. Well, I also have Thousand Oaks on the brain because my brain tends to leap decades in the past.
Have you ever had a salad? Have you heard of Thousand Island dressing?
Yeah, I have heard of it. I try to avoid it, but I've heard of it.
888-957-9570. That's your number. We're about 19 minutes away from saying hello to Kevin Harlan. One of the great voices there is in sports. He's got the AFC Championship game call. He just called the Packers beating the Seahawks, and we're going to talk to him about what's coming out here this Sunday. The Carpenter in Pittsburgh. Hello, Carpenter.
Hey, guys. How you guys? Enjoying your show on my way home from work?
Thank you, sir.
Really, guys, I'm really looking forward to the game this weekend. I'd rather the 49ers play the Aaron Rodgers-led Packers instead of the Brett Favre, which used to destroy my Niners back when Steve Young and Jim Druckenmiller used to play. And another thing I want to bring up also is, Ray, I used to really enjoy, I think you used to write for the Chronicle, I believe it was.
Yes, 119 years ago.
With Glenn Dickey, was an editorial too. I used to really enjoy reading articles with my dad. Me and my dad used to sit and read the Sporting Green on Sunday and read your editorials and stuff. I used to really enjoy that. It's really nice to hear you on the air, and it brings up some good memories with my father. And I'm really looking forward to the Niners game. It's really amazing how fast the team can turn around in the last in a few years. You get a couple, get a different coach and general manager, and you get some new people in there, and it's amazing how fast they can turn around from
Carpenter, man. Carpenter, thank you very much. I'll tell you right now that a compliment for Ray is the number one way to make him uncomfortable, so keep him coming.
I think it's clear that he hated his father.
Number two. Oh, geez, what did the number two? I had a number two in there.
Focus. Come on.
I did. I'm so sorry.
Okay, never mind.
Oh, no, he talked about how quickly the season turned around, and that is what I want to talk about, Carpenter. I used to say 2 years ago, I was saying that the Niners were 2 years away from being 2 years away. It has accelerated. The timetable of them getting good has been greatly accelerated. I think it's part and parcel in this coaching staff knowing what it's doing. Then you got to get the talent. They've made some really good draft picks, and they've had some fabulous free agent fits. And then you have the depth that they needed that used to not exist. This was not a deep team, even when it was a good team last time around in the Harbaugh days. They're much deeper now than they used to be. And it's not quite strength in numbers, but it's probably a football team that gets to play the strength in numbers card more than anyone else, just based on how successful they've been with so many men down at so many critical positions. I mean, losing your right tackle and left tackle, that's usually about enough to ruin a year.
They've made their share of mistakes, but they've made remarkably few in 3 years. That percentage will go up in time because that's the nature of trying to guess what college athletes are going to be when they play professionals all the time. But I don't know that you can look at who they've brought in over these 3 years. It's not just a one-year turnaround. It's a three-year turnaround. That's the rebuild. And say they made mistakes here, 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 and here, because really they haven't made many. Well, and
their mistakes are clearly defined, as is their success. Where they're really getting over is there's not a lot of middle ground. There is not a lot of gray area in the players that they've picked. There's a Z, we clearly got a player, we clearly got a project. There's not a lot in between.
There isn't, but we're also, we're really at the start of evaluating a lot of the depth of their draft choices. And I think with next year, we'll get a better sense of who they are, a better sense after that, because I think every draft class needs 3 years to percolate so you can figure out what you've got. I mean, Nick Bosa could basically wander off into the woods at the end of this season and say, I don't want to play football ever again. Then you have to ask, well, is that a bust or is that a great pick? I mean, just it's guessing the future is a great way to look like an idiot.
Chris Borland looked like a hell of a pick until he retired.
Yeah, but based on what we know right now, they have not made very many mistakes that have put them into a bind. They've managed to cover whatever mistakes they are with good ideas, good choices, and good players who have essentially made them look good. I mean, nobody in their right mind would have predicted this of Richard Sherman once he got here. He was damaged goods. He was a one-legged player. And I don't want to give them they had the foresight to see it, but they didn't have the foresight to see this. I mean, Richard Sherman gets the credit for what Richard Sherman has reinvented himself as. Bosa, on the other hand, is very much that's to their credit, because even though he's the second pick, I don't think they would have said he's one of the three or four best defensive players in football.
You know what I think were two of the best reinvest or walk away choices this team has made? Ironically, and no one would have bet this at the window, Jimmy Ward. Jimmy Ward was a great reinvest instead of let walk away. Eric Armstead was a decision that they had to make. And when they made it, a lot of people thought, well, they're expecting him to get a lot better than I'm expecting him to become. And if you were doubting Eric Armstead, you were betting incorrectly. The Niners bet right.
Well, I mean, well, the one thing, and if you want to just encapsulate this, they don't bury guys. I mean, I think you could make a case that they've sort of buried Dante Pettis, but it's not that they buried him. It's that they said, okay, show us everything you are. They waited out Jimmy Ward.
Mm-hmm.
They waited out Eric Armstead. In fact, they gave Eric Armstead more help than they've given Jimmy Ward. I mean, we're going to surround you by great players, and we'll see if you can be a great player too. And great may be too strong a word, but I don't think anybody would question what Armstead has brought to the party. It's they have had so far a pretty clear idea of who they think they need to stay with, even after a difficult start. I mean, Mostert's as good an example of that as anybody. He was a fumbler, and then he stopped being a fumbler. I mean, they just said, no, we see things in you. We're going to, Samuel did not start with a full head of steam either. They let him grow into it, and they enhanced his ability to grow into it when they went and got Sanders. I mean, they don't bury guys, at least they haven't buried guys as much as they have let them bury themselves and then moved on quickly.
By the way, I just got a note from Albie saying that Kevin Harlan needs to push back to like 340. Okay, that's cool. We'll keep taking calls. We'll run up to Kevin Harlan, who's going to join us a little bit later on. I'm high, down hard, a little later here on 95.7 The Game. This is Daniel, South San Francisco. What do you got, Daniel?
What's up, guys? Happy Tuesday. I was there on Saturday for the game, and it was pretty raucous out there, with Dan Buns, and they had Nate Diaz do the sound horn out there with the fog horn and everything.
Yeah, I saw Dan Buns was ringing that thing. He looked like he had a busted paw, his arm was in a sling, but he was still there giving a good crank, putting a lot of the body into it. I think it affected the game.
Yeah, I think the one person to probably have, come out on a Sunday since the NFC Championship, Kyle Williams, try to get some sort of redemption.
Oh, you keep that loser as far away from an important football game as. But no, I'm just kidding. Thank you, Daniel. Look, Kyle Williams, one day, since everybody's all about forgiveness and hugging in 2020, we'll probably get some here. But no, look, fumbled, huge fumble. You got to wear that the rest of your life. That's what sports is. Sports comes with consequence. By the way, cheating should come with more consequence than it does. And that's a topic for a little bit later on in the week. But no, I don't need Kyle. I don't need Kyle Williams ringing any horns or bells or anything like that at all. Thank you very much. No redemption, Ray. No redemption. None.
You'll be quite the parent.
Now, if it were my kid, we'd be a little bit worried. Kyle Williams ain't my kid.
You know what? I don't think it would be a bad thing, since it's really of no consequence either way. You know, it would be a cool thing to say, okay, we get that you fumbled. We've decided not to condemn you to death in the minds of the fan base. I mean, I think that's something that the organization can do without any cost to themselves. I mean, it's not like he, you know, went somewhere else and then proved to be a great player who screwed the 49ers over and over again.
Let me promise you this right now, Ray Ratto, that if they sprung Kyle Williams unannounced, the 49ers would boo so loud. Niner fans would boo him so loud, you wouldn't even be able to hear that damn foghorn he was trying to blow.
But they wouldn't. I mean, look, people knew Dan Bunz was going to do that weeks ago. And they, look, marketers know how to turn the true believers on anything. If they sold it as, you know what, Kyle Williams is one of us, he made an egregious mistake, we're okay with him, we're okay with it, they could sell that.
Not until there's a Lombardi trophy. Not until, if you're telling me Kyle Williams blows a foghorn at one point in time next year after they have won a Super Bowl, that's a, okay, but Bill Buckner wasn't allowed at Fenway until they won a championship. You know what I mean?
No, he refused to go to Fenway.
Well, he was stubborn as hell. But
they asked him 8 or 9 different times before he showed up. I mean, so it's
But 8 or 9 different times before the World Series? I think they had to ask him 8 or 9 times even after the World Series. I don't think they started sending out invitations before there was a parade up Lansdowne Street.
No, they didn't do it in 1987. That's true.
No.
But, no, I mean, times passed. I mean, Kyle Williams, you know, it's just, you know, team wasn't ready to win that anyway. I mean, the only reason they got close in the Super Bowl is because Jed York put a wrench in the generator at a stadium that's 1,000 years old.
This segment brought to you by Nutrisystem for men. See how simple losing weight is with Nutrisystem. The meals come to your door. You eat the food. You lose the weight. Order at Nutrisystem.com/radio. That's Nutrisystem.com/radio. Restrictions apply. Call or see website for details. If you're on hold, stay right there. We're coming back to take your call. Kevin Harlan had to push back about 15, 20 minutes. We're going to talk to him around 3:45 this afternoon. So don't you move a muscle. Still an awful lot coming up. Damon Ratto and Kolsky on 95.
Gee, do they?
What's wrong with George Kittle?
Yeah, nobody's saying that because nobody's saying that. I don't think there's a huge issue with Devontae Adams. I think the problem with Devontae Adams is that there isn't a Devontae Adams on the other side of the ball, on the other side of the field, I mean.
Right.
It's that he's got one real option to throw to. He's got the ghost of Jimmy Graham. He's got a collection of very average wide receivers on the other side. I mean, they're not deep enough. That's the real issue. It's not that they don't have good players, but they're not deep enough offensively.
Mike in San Francisco. Mike, you're on 95.7 The Game. Hello.
Hey, how you guys doing, man? Thanks for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, listen, I was just thinking about the Pack and the Seahawks, man. What is it with the Seahawks? Are they the luckiest team in the league, or do they have like a picture of the head of officials in women's underwear or something, man? Have you ever heard of anything like, after additional footage, the play still stands, like that fourth down when Jimmy Graham stumbled to get it? Have you ever heard anything like that?
I mean, I don't know if I've heard it quite phrased that way, but I didn't think that there's a fix in. And if the Seahawks had the photographs that you suggest they might, why aren't they coming to play in the NFC title game?
No, I mean, Seattle's hard to beat.
Right. They're just a huge pain in the ass of a football team.
And if And I know, or at least I'm not sure that the caller is suggesting this, but if you think the games are fixed, why are you watching? Why are you bothering?
Yeah, I don't think he was suggesting that.
No, but I mean, it's just, it's when you bring up the officials, essentially you're saying either that team always gets a break because they're them or because there's skullduggery going on. And I think the NFL has shown over the past several years that given that they don't know what they're doing, they couldn't fix a game properly.
Right. It's incompetence that's the problem.
If they, yeah, well, it's a rule book that has been made incomprehensible. And people who, when they are confronted by something incomprehensible, make it more incomprehensible. I mean, it's
comprehensively incomprehensible.
Yeah, I don't think there is an official on the field anywhere that could possibly do the job right unless they went back to the time when they trained them more aggressively and let them use their common sense. They don't want to do that anymore. They want technology to save them, but the people running the technology are people, and they're no good at it. It's why the games are officiated the way they are. It's not that they've picked 114 people who don't know anything. They've basically given them a system where they can't possibly know what they're supposed to know, and they won't let them exercise their judgment.
Text line says, I'm never going to forgive Kyle Williams. That Super Bowl appearance may have been a trophy, which might have kept Harbaugh here, made it easier to put up with him. I don't know if anything would have made but look, you're right. I mean, can you only imagine if Jim had another Super Bowl appearance and possibly a trophy? That trophy would have come before the second go around the Harbaugh Bowl. Maybe you win one, it's easier to win two. Yeah, I mean, that to me, that's how sports works. I'd like to think that I'm reasonably unreasonable and never forgiving the guy who made the mistake in the game that prevented you from being everything you ever wanted to be. Like, that's sports normal to me. Again, sports normal, not real life, real world normal. Forgive and forget, move on in the real world. Sports normal, it means you can take a grudge with you the rest of your life if it makes you feel better about being angry. That's kind of how it works. 888-957-9570, Oscar Concord. What do you got, Oscar?
Hey, how's it going, guys? Love the show. I just want to ask you guys something real quick. I'm going through the tunnels. I'm sorry if I cut out. But last week, everyone was saying that I should be scared of the Vikings, that Vikings are going to tank us, and that we don't have a chance. National media was saying everyone was picking the Vikings, and I was like, nah, there's no way. We're going to beat them, and we're going to beat them convincingly. And we did. So please, I want to know, why should I be of any type of afraid of Green Bay this weekend? Why should I not think that we're just going to manhandle them like I think we are going to do?
Oscar, I was asked that question by a Green Bay radio station, and since then a fatwa has been taken out on me in the state of Wisconsin, which you wouldn't think would be known for fatwas, but today it is. Look, I don't have a compelling reason to sell you a fear-based reason to watch the way that I thought the Minnesota Vikings were going to be a long afternoon, possibly. I did think Minnesota had more talent at important positions, especially at the position of running back, and especially at the position of making your quarterback miserable. Like, Minnesota's front seven was decent enough. Stephon Diggs, Thielen, the weapons were decent enough. I still had almost an element of the fear of the unknown of Kirk Cousins that was going maybe into the equation I was putting together. And you had a team that very much mirrored the 49ers statistically, mathematically, an awful lot of it lined up. It's not nearly as close this time around. The reason to fear the Green Bay Packers is the same reason you should always fear and respect a Hall of Fame-bound quarterback. Hall of Fame-bound quarterbacks don't become Hall of Fame-bound quarterbacks without being pretty damn good at this. Unless Aaron Rodgers starts leaping over buildings in a single bound, faster than a speeding bullet, more powerful than a locomotive, I don't see it. I really don't. And I don't see it because I'm arrogant or want the Niners in the Super Bowl or anything. This is just dude looking at football teams. How do they stack up? The Niners should beat the Green Bay Packers. Why should you be afraid? His name's Aaron. That's the only reason why you have really to be afraid.
I don't look at football as quarterback v. quarterback. So to me, it's about strength versus strength, strength versus weakness. And I could easily see Aaron Rodgers having a great day and losing the game because I don't see all the other ways that Green Bay is better. It's not really about Aaron Rodgers anyway. I know that that's the popular way to look at football, and there are people at this station who want to look at football that way. It is clinically insane because you've seen the examples of how teams can take an average quarterback and do great things by having other parts of their team that are so good that they change games in and of themselves, the Tennessee Titans being only the latest example of that. I mean, if quarterbacks alone mattered, Seattle would be playing in this game. Because with all due respect to Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson single-handedly took a battered team and got them 13 wins and a place in the postseason. He did that essentially without any help.
All right, well, you're contradicting yourself. You're saying it's never about one quarterback except this one team where it's only about one quarterback.
Eventually, that all comes back. That's A, it's an outlier, and B, it never lasts too long. It's who's the better team. The Packers are the better team for 35 minutes in that game on Sunday. That's why they won.
888-957-9570. Oh, Mitch in Manteca. Hello, Mitch.
Hey, guys. How you doing? Ray, Damon. Real quick, I think our defense is the top two in the league and number one as far as it is right now in the playoffs. But what I wanted to get your opinion on, now I know next season DeForest Buckner and Eric Armstead, I know they're going to command big money. Do you see any way, or do you think the 49ers organization is going to make it a point to try to keep both of them, or maybe not if they can't afford them? I just wanted to get your guys' opinion on that.
They'll find a way to afford them both because it's insane to let either of them go.
I would agree
I don't believe you can replace either of them. That's the key. You figure out other ways. Because nobody has ever in the history of football entered the season over the salary cap. They have people who are paid there to make sure that doesn't happen. And the trick is being creative enough so that you can keep the things that are important to you, even if it means incrementally weakening another part of the team. But I think they have established that they are vital to the operation of that defense. So I think they keep them both. And take it from me, because I know nothing.
But if you got to make one choice or the other. There is no keeping both. Parag's done the math. He can't fit them both. So you got to bring back both, Buckner or Armstead. Who are you betting on? I'm keeping Buckner.
Buckner. I don't think anybody would argue that. Armstead is a very good player who was allowed to become a very good player because of the players around him. Buckner is that rare guy on this team that was a difference maker before.
Yes.
So, I would say Buckner's the guy you would keep.
I agree.
But I think they should be able to keep both of them.
I agree. Which is terrible radio. Big Al in Sacramento. How are you, Big Al?
Hello, man. And I want to ask, especially because I like Mr. Ratto, the way he talks about the betting aspect of sports. So I think I got to lay down and call my cousin in Las Vegas. Drop a few bills. Because I think both teams are going to cover. I'm going to parlay that bet. I know some people are going to be writing. Listen, the 49ers should easily win that one by my 14. Tennessee, I know, is scaring people, but I just don't see. I think somehow Kansas City finds a way, and I don't just mean stacking the box with 6-7 guys, but I think they still win it, and their offense is so dynamic, so they can cover. I think they're 7.5 or 8. And then also for 49er fans, I'd say I don't know if they can do it easily. But, boy, I'd love to see the 49ers move up and get my favorite guy from The Ohio State, Acuna, to play cornerback. That guy's dynamic.
Well, I mean, is he projected to fall out of the top 25? I mean, you know, there's I think you'll take a Super Bowl appearance over a draft pick at this point in this team's development. But I hear you. Very good corner. And the Niners are going to be looking wide receiver and corner. Right? I mean, we ain't even close to talking about the NFL draft. But wide receiver, cornerback, safety help. Yeah, that's where this draft goes.
Oh, no. They have holes. I mean, no team doesn't. But I think in terms of his gambling question, people who bet the obvious parlay last weekend lost their shorts. I mean, Vegas got fat of parlay bettors last week who had the Chiefs, who had the Ravens, who had the 49ers. And because the Ravens didn't win, you got hammered, and everybody had that parlay. So I'm always reluctant to do parlays anyway because I think it's a sucker's bet. But I have a hard time making a compelling case for a parlay with anybody but Chiefs 49ers. If I was forced at gunpoint to bet a parlay, that's how I'd bet it. Even though I hate betting chalk, because chalk's not the way to bet in pro football.
No. And neither are parlays, to be totally honest.
No. The more they gimmick it up, the more they're getting, the more the house advantage is, because that's how they work. You have to know that ahead of time. So you have to be really good at money management, and you have to be really good at picking your spots. And last week, everybody was convinced they'd picked their spot correctly, and they lost their shorts.
888-957-9570. Last night, there was a national championship decided in Louisiana, and I'm guessing Bourbon Street is still rolling at this hour. I mean, man, they know how to party in New Orleans at LSU, and you just put the two of those together for a national championship game. Joe Burrow this is going to sound accusatory, Ray. I'm not accusing him of doing anything wrong because he didn't do anything wrong. But Joe Burrow is a 23-year-old already professional quarterback who got a year of college football before he now has to go play for the Cincinnati Bengals. And he will be the number one pick in the draft. He's on the clock. Bengals, they're taking him. If he is the first brick in them turning that around, he's going to be a significant player. Like, I mean, you'd like to think that an awful lot of what you saw out of that guy would translate, but he's going to step into a bad situation almost instantly. I don't know if he can rise above it or not, but what'd you think of his year? His year is 100% comical if you look at it statistically. It's if you were playing a video game, you would insist that before you started the next season, you went up a difficulty level.
Yeah, no, he came with a cheat code. That said, there's a great way to even all that out. And all you have to do is ask Baker Mayfield how it works. Is send a great player to a bad team. Find out how quickly he stops being a great player. I don't know whether Zach Taylor can coach. I do know that Mike Brown is light years behind the times in terms of football. And there's a reason why Cincinnati, even when it had tons of talent, and it did have tons of talent, got nowhere with it.
Light years behind? Is that the team motto in Cincinnati? Light years behind.
Yeah. And it wasn't Marvin Lewis, because Marvin Lewis is a good coach.
He was.
But the flaws in an organization permeate down. And there is no situation that I can think of where a bad organization won a championship, because a bad organization can hurt you in so many ways that a good organization can't.
What if I told you USC made a mistake letting Ed Orgeron go? Would you believe me? It's a trick question, Ray.
No, I don't. It's worth thinking about, because at LSU, a guy like Ed Orgeron has all the advantages a coach can have, because they throw money at every problem.
USC doesn't?
USC doesn't the way it used to. I think the post-Reggie Bush era has been largely about a school that is a little bit gun-shy about it. The people that throw the most money in the Pac-12 now are at Oregon.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't see USC basically going, screw it, we're throwing deep. I mean, that was Mike Garrett when he was the athletic director. Nothing was too good for the football team.
How about
now they operate in a budget?
How about Pac-12 officials not ruining the national championship game? I would not have bet on that last night. They were pretty invisible. Good job, crew.
It suggests to me that when you give those guys two good teams who know how to play, they don't get too involved. I think the Pac-12 is such a weird place to play football right now that I think everything about it's a pie fight. I mean, just, you know, I'll be interested to see what Washington State does without Mike Leach, but there are a lot of nutty situations in this conference now.
I know exactly what Washington State's going to do without Mike Leach. You don't?
Depends on whether they get somebody else out of the Big 12 who is just goofy enough to get junior college guys to get in there. They've done it before. They've done it, but they're not automatically bad.
Who was the Hawaii coach?
Dan Rolovich.
Didn't they hire Dan Rolovich? Is that what they did? Is it done?
I think it was
Nick
about
Rolovich?
To be done. I haven't followed it lately, but I think it's probably done. And he's pretty goofy too. I think they could be okay. I don't think they're doomed to be the 2-10 Washington States of 15 years ago with Paul Wolf.
I hear you, but I think it's also easier to recruit to Hawaii than it is Pullman.
Well, then why doesn't Hawaii ever win the Mountain West? It's not easy to recruit to Boise, except that it is because Boise wins.
Yeah. Boise must be paying them off somehow, some way. That blue turf money they're rolling around in.
They've had a series of really good coaches.
Well, they have. They've also had some very good coaches.
Yeah. I mean, just that's part of it. I mean, they've continued to be a great team by that level of standard through Dan Hawkins, Chris Peterson, and they're going to do that again and Brian Harsin probably forever. They're a lot like Gonzaga basketball.
I tell you what, we're probably not going to talk much Hawaii or Boise State football with Kevin Harlan, but we're going to get right back into the NFL playoffs, what we just saw, what we might be about, might see soon coming up next, starting Sunday. He will be calling the AFC title game at Arrowhead. We'll get to that. We'll certainly start, though, with what's going on down in Santa Clara. That is next. Kevin Harlan. And a game brought to you by Fremont Bank, full service banking, no compromises.
Now back to Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky on 95.7, The Game.
He is the voice of the NFL, the NBA, all over Westwood One, TNT. I believe he's coming out here on Thursday, up high, down hard. One of the best in the business, Kevin Harlan, joining us here on 95.7 The Game. Kevin, how are you, pal?
I'm doing great, Damon. Ray, good to be on with you guys. And I think it's going to be a nice game out in Santa Clara for the Niners and the Packers NFC Championship. And two quarterbacks that have a kind of a similar style, to be quite honest. I think it's going to be closer than some people think.
You know, when a team throttles a team in the regular season, it's always hard to do it again. But when I really start looking at the check boxes of who's got what in this, the only check I put next to Green Bay, where they clearly have an advantage, is at quarterback. Otherwise, I think the Niners are superior everywhere else on the field.
I don't know that the gap between the Aaron Rodgers of 2 and 3 years ago is as great is that now. I think it's a little bit closer, and I guess I would say this. The main difference between the two teams, in my eyes, is one more elite Green Bay receiver. Not even elite. I shouldn't just good, solid, reputable NFL receiver. Like, I look at the Niners, and you've got, if you throw Kittle in there, who's elite and maybe the best tight end in pro football, and then Debo, and then Emmanuel, and then you've got, I just think a better feel at that position right now than Green Bay does. They've really only got one, and that's Davante Adams, and then there is a pretty significant drop-off. Thus, Adams gets a lot of attention. Rodgers will give him almost two looks every drop back. Then he's left with just a couple options, and it's really kind of put them in your hand, roll them on the floor, and see what you got, because it has not been like that second valve that he can push or pull. And I think Garoppolo's got that advantage. Even at tight end with Jimmy Graham, he can't get open. He's not the Jimmy Graham of 2-3 years ago as a Pro Bowl tight end. He's not close to that. He's lost speed. His maneuverability isn't what it once was when he was in that Pro Bowl era of his career. So I think because of that, Rodgers throws it away a lot. His percentage is down. And thus, that's why I say maybe at quarterback it's a little more even than we all may think going in.
If this game were at Lambeau, the way you've explained the difference between the two teams and the difference between this Packer team and the Packers of 2 or 3 years ago, it almost sounds like it wouldn't matter where the game was, that the 49ers' advantages just stand out more. And even though the game might be closer in Green Bay, probably not close enough.
I think, Ray, you've nailed it. I think that's kind of how I feel. I don't know what that Green Bay feel is now. I don't know what it's like for any teams, to be quite honest, because we see teams go on the road and win with regularity. And by the way, just a couple of short years ago without Garoppolo, San Francisco went to Lambeau on a Monday night and played well. So I don't, and then you take into consideration what happened this year earlier on Sunday night in Santa Clara, and I think Green Bay is going uphill, and I think it's a little bit steeper than maybe even the odds are going into this middle portion of the week. I think the defenses are pretty close. There may be one more elite player on that side than on the Green Bay side for the Niners, maybe two. And I really like Warner. They're a little bit healthier now. We know at linebacker, that makes a difference. Quan is back. And I think that Green Bay does have some edge rusher ability comparable to what the Niners have, to be quite honest. So I don't know if it's that great an advantage. So I guess I come back to the offenses. Lines are basically the same. Tight end, clear advantage for the Niners, and wide receiver depth and just overall quality, I would definitely put in San Francisco's corner. Running backs, to me, are pretty close. Although, if I really had to sit down and start to pick them apart, maybe at the Niners. So it's uphill for Green Bay. And those are more optics talking than maybe if I sit down and look at the analytical numbers. But optically, it feels that way. It looks that way to me.
Is there a palpable tactical difference between Kyle Shanahan and Matt LaFleur to the point where you could say, for one of the rare times in football, that somebody actually does have a demonstrative advantage at the coaching position?
I don't know, Ray, that I would take it that far, but I think clearly had to work with this overall roster without Garoppolo. And I even said last year, I thought that would be a benefit down the road, and not that any, I mean, everybody said that, or a lot of people said that. I just thought that when he had to deal with a lot of injuries and not the full accompaniment of people that they've got now, that this, in the long run, would benefit the Niners when it's going to matter, and this is the year I thought it would matter. And I think, sure enough, guys have gotten time, whether it's Mostert or whoever you want to pick, who got more reps, became more of a factor, carried more on their shoulders, more responsibility, whoever it might have been on either side of the ball. It just felt like this was an investment in guys that would have to somehow down the line in a big season, in big games, stand out. And that is my feel on what Kyle had to deal with the last couple years and what LaFleur has not had to go. He's not had to go down that road. He's not had to work a season without Rodgers. He's not, because it's in his first year. He's not had a season where he's lost maybe a playmaker or two and had to really maneuver. Now, I know he had Kittle gone for a couple games this past year. In fact, refresh my memory, was Kittle out in that San Francisco Seattle game on the Monday night in Santa Clara?
Yes, he was.
That he was not in that game. So that is something. Now, he has had to deal for a four-game stretch without Devontae Adams at receiver, and consequently the team really hit a trough. They staggered. So it was pretty evident that what Rodgers was working with when Adams is gone, there is no deceptiveness. There's nothing that gives the defense in that area a moment of pause. With Adams, Green Bay has about all the firepower they've got right now on this roster. And I just don't know if it's enough with the clever defensive backs that the Niners have. So I think that I would give the nod to Kyle purely on having that exposure to different situations that LaFleur has not had to tackle in his first year with the Packers.
The unmistakable voice of Kevin Harlan here on 95.7 The Game. You had the call at Lambeau last week, and I really thought that if the Seahawks made it to the NFC title game, the familiarity there would have been a little bit more of a problem with the Niners. And Kevin, even though the Packers get to this game, is there a team this year that just did a better job hanging around in every game than Seattle?
No. 10 one-score wins, but it was all on the quarterback.
Always.
So, you know, yeah, if you take him out of the equation, they are probably 500. I mean, just the other night at Lambeau, they got to within, what, five, and they made it a game, and it was only because of Wilson. Lynch wasn't a factor. Really, few players stood out. Yes, it would be closer. There's no doubt. And it wouldn't be the 7.5 or whatever it is right now that they're talking about.
You're going to be off to Arrowhead now for the AFC title game. Talk about scary teams. When Patrick Mahomes is feeling it, I don't know if there's a more scary unit in all of football than the Chiefs are here to play a little offense this quarter.
Well, especially now, and they've got, you know, they don't have a running game. They do it by committee and with journeymen. So that's the one component that to me, you know, strikes a little bit of, you know, question mark in the Chiefs' attack. They're so reliant on Mahomes and on Kelce, the tight end, and on Tyreek Hill, and a couple good quality receivers under him, like Sammy Watkins and DeMarcus Robinson. So they're kind of like the Niners in that regard. They've got quality and depth at receiver. They've got the elite tight end, but they don't have the you know, pack at running back that the Niners have. And if these two meet in the Super Bowl, that would be like my first observation right off the bat. So Kansas City has got, you know, just they've got to deal with a team that right now is playing with abandon on the road. They've won a couple games that no one thought they would in Foxborough, in Baltimore, and they've done it with the running back as the centerpiece of their attack. And an opportunistic defense, and kind of like, who, you know, we have no pressure on us because we're a sixth seed. We have no pressure on us. No one expected even this when we began the season 2-4, made a big quarterback change. So Tennessee comes in, you know, freewheeling, letting it rip, riding this running back. To me, the big question is, they give him the ball a lot. Surely there is a warranty that says it expires. And I don't know when it's going to be for Derrick Henry. Will it be in Arrowhead this week? Could it be in the Super Bowl if they make it that far? They're sure putting a lot of chips into his corner, but so far it's worked. They've controlled the clock. They've gotten the touchdowns. It's opened up what passing game they have, and it's made kind of a quarterback who is kind of a meh now into a guy that say, yeah, you know what? He's more than just a manager. He's got options. He can do the job, and he's got to be contended with. That's what that one running back has done for the entire run that the Tennessee Titans have had.
It's always so good to hear you. You know, Mary Hart had her legs insured for, I think, $1 million. What are we going to insure your vocal cords for? You're the hardest working man in the business. You're going to be here for Warriors Nuggets, and then you're turning around going back to Kansas City. Were you in New Orleans last night?
No, I was not. No, I was not in New Orleans. We're actually just leaving Green Bay right now. We have a summer home up in up in northern Wisconsin, which we just shut down for the winter. But we stayed there over this past couple days when the Packers hosted, which was a lot of fun. A lot of fun snow up here, but we're headed back home now to Kansas City and getting ready for what I think is going to be a good weekend. But listen, if it is the Niners and if it's the Chiefs, that right now on paper going from this point forward may be the sexiest Super Bowl matchup with, I don't know how they're going to look at it, the people that know more about football than me, and not to get too far ahead of ourselves there, but it feels that way. That would be a dynamite Super Bowl 54.
The call would be extraordinary. You wouldn't even need a drunk guy on the field to fill time. Like, it would be...
Oh, no.
There'd be
right,
plenty.
You're right, Damon. No need for that.
Kevin, you are the best. Thank you so much, sir. We'll see you on Thursday at Chase Center.
Thank you, Damon. Thank you, Ray. Great to be on with you guys. Always fun. Talk to you down the road.
One of the best in the business, Kevin Harlan here on 95.7 The Game. And by the way, welcome one and all to our 4 o'clock hour.
You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, a radio.com sports station.
Text line says you could literally have Kevin Harlan reading the ABCs and I would listen. His voice is iconic, and it is. That guy is a great, great play-by-play man. And for those who don't understand him, like Kevin Harlan, up high, down hard, someone's like, could you please explain the Harlan grumble?